This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The following is a GoPowerCat.com production.
It's Monday. It used to be my day off, but now I do the Big 12 Insiders with Hanley during the week because I do K-State Insiders every Monday at 1. You should be here. Well, if you are here, you're here. It got too confusing. This is the K-State Insiders, and I'm glad you're here.
Welcome to the Insiders, your K-State sports show, presented by Synergy Financial Partners. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
It's not good on game day. It's Brian Hanley and Glenn Kinley. It's not good on game day. They don't even know what show you're doing. I said the Big 12 Insiders, and they're like, oh, crap, I'm supposed to be saying K-State Insiders. That's how my mind's going to work today, apparently. But I know these guys. These guys are friends. I get to hang out with friends every Monday now instead of having a day off. That's better. Guys, let's get to it. I know K-State has hope. I'm not going to say does K-State have hope, because they do, because this is a rivalry, and we know weird stuff happens in rivalries. But based on the track record leading up to this game, I don't feel good for the K-State nation celebrating a victory, because K-State is in, frankly, not just a tailspin, a very worrisome one. And Glenn, I want to start with you. They just seem completely out of sorts right now. They don't have the same energy, the same focus that they had earlier in the Big 12 season, now that they've lost four straight. And now, oh, by the way, you get Kansas on Big Monday.
Yeah, and you're talking about a Kansas team that just beat the piss out of a fourth-ranked Houston team with maybe the best defense in the country. Kansas played maybe its best game of the year on Saturday against Houston. I guess the one silver lining or positive spin that you could look at is that KU has struggled away from home this year. I think they're 2-3 in true road games. They've won big games that maybe even people doubted them in. On Saturday, they were a home underdog for the second time in the Bill Self era, which is wild. They beat Houston. They beat UConn. They've won some other huge games. They beat Kentucky, but they lost to UCF on the road. They lost to West Virginia on the road. This is a team that struggled to win away from home, but K-State doesn't feel like it has much going for it right now. Saturday's game, they actually controlled most of the way.
Yeah.
And we've seen earlier in conference play, they won games it felt like they shouldn't have. I look at Oklahoma State. They didn't control most of that game earlier in the year when they met in Manhattan, I should clarify, and they won. The Baylor game, I would say Baylor was in control 38 minutes of the game, and K-State won. This game, it felt like K-State let slip away, and that's becoming a trend.
Yeah, it is. Big B, should K-State Nation be really worried?
I mean, yeah, they should definitely be really worried. Now, it doesn't mean they can't win the basketball game, doesn't mean they can't win. But at the same time, yeah, they should be worried. Here's the one thing that I will say. While Kansas is a good defensive team for the most part, they're different than Houston as they don't pressure you. Like, different than Oklahoma. They guard you, but they don't pressure you. And there's a huge difference between the two. So maybe that will lead to K-State maybe getting some open shots or not turning the ball over as much, which is something that we're going to need to win the game. You're going to have 18, 20 turnovers against KU. You're getting blown out. That's going to happen. So maybe that will be a little bit different. They don't have a deep bench, but at the same time, I don't know that K-State necessarily uses their bench, even though that we might have some players, we don't use them. But there's definitely hope, and we'll bring up we talked earlier, Fitz, about a good question that came up in the chat here. I think it's a great question. But, yeah, I think there's hope, but it's going to be tough because KU is playing very, very good basketball, right? And K-State is playing about as lousy as you can get.
Talking about a Jayhawk team who shot nearly 70% from the field on Saturday. So if you're a Wildcat fan, your only hope today might just be maybe they used up all their makes on Saturday.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you what. KU, whoa, there goes Glenn. KU impresses me a couple times a year with, wow, that's a whole nother level. That was a whole nother level of a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest here. Houston isn't the same away from its home court either. A lot of teams are that way. But Houston seems to be particularly, what's the word I'm looking for? Not dangerous. It's almost more than that. At home, they're just so elite. Like Jerome Tang said, I've never seen defense like that. Mm-hmm. And then I watch them on the road, and I don't see that same defense. So, maybe Vegas overvalued Houston on the road way too much. I didn't understand the spread. I've given up sports betting because I suck, but I certainly would have bet KU, and I'd bet KU tonight at 5 points because K-State's been losing by more than five to other teams not named KU. So it's going to be a tough road, but there is hope because, Big B, you know this in a rivalry game, there's no way you cannot be up. You just can't. Now, maybe you're up, and you come out and you get smacked in the face, and you're like, oh, okay, we suck. We're going to be bad, which, you know, you see teams do that in rivalry games. But usually if you're up, you're going to sustain it for a while. And at home, K-State will sustain it because the crowd won't let them die right away. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued, Big B, but can the rivalry pull K-State through this one?
I don't know if it can pull them through. It can definitely keep them in the game for a little while. Now, they're going to have to do their part. But I think the rivalry absolutely can keep them in the game. Pulling them through, it's going to be tough. Like I said, KU's good. And if we're just putting all our cards on the table, KU has better players than K-State. I mean, they just do. So you've got to do something extraordinary to go and beat a team when you're outnumbered. You know, so they've got to be able to do that. What that's going to be, I think you got to have good shooting nights. You're going to have somebody that you don't expect to have to come through. That's usually what happens in a rivalry game of some sort, an upset like this. Somebody does something extraordinary that you don't expect, and your team can win. I think it's going to take something like that for K-State. Now, that extraordinary could be, you know, somebody going off, you know, for 30 points. Or something like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bench guy coming off the bench, you know, scoring 18 points in 15 minutes. You know, I know that's happened before, but you're asking a lot of that. So I just think something extraordinary is going to have to happen. It's KU is really good. They've got better players, but that doesn't mean that K-State can't win. They've got to play smart. They got to play hard. Let the crowd help them. And the way that you let the crowd help them is you keep them engaged, which means you got to keep them in the game, which means you got to defend, and you got to make some shots. You just got to make some shots.
You got to match early. The crowd's energy. If you don't match the crowd's energy, they're going to say, what are we doing? Why are we investing so much if you don't want to invest too? And I think that's a real key for K-State. We didn't see it against Oklahoma. This team is floundering, but – again, in the Big 12, every night's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Hasn't always been that way. The last, you know, 3-4 games for K-State, it's been pretty similar. But you can reinvent yourself, and it is about matchups, which brings us to Kansas. Glenn, you cover KU quite a bit. Give me your two or three guys that you think will be the key for KU in this matchup, and who would you put on them to try to alleviate the stress of that talent KU has?
Yeah, well, Brian, when you talk about matching the energy, I can tell you one guy who I can assure you is going to do that tonight. It's Hunter Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson loves the atmosphere in Allen Fieldhouse. Yeah. Hunter Dickinson loves the atmosphere when he has tens of thousands of people who despise him and does not want to see him make a play. I think he eats that up more than he does people cheering him on. He loves that villain role. He's going to be juiced tonight. We saw it when he was at Michigan. We've seen it when he was at KU. He loves it. And KU's going to have to, or K-State rather, is going to have to find a way to limit him and to slow him down. And then the other kid that maybe I think people are talking about, but if you're not following KU, I might be talking about him or think people are because I do follow them. Johnny Furphy's been phenomenal. He's been starting the last, I want to say, 6 or 7 games, averaging over 15 points a game. In those games, he didn't start before the new year, and since he has been, he's been terrific. He's a true freshman, really finding his own, who K-State has to make sure they give him plenty of attention. But really, KU has 5 guys who can beat you if you don't stop them. And I almost wonder if and this is easier said than done, but if K-State's best strategy in this one might be getting one or two of those 5 guys in foul trouble. Because Kansas is really, really good. They're not the deepest team in the league. And I don't know if they can afford to be without Dickinson for 16 minutes or to be without their point guard, DeJuan Harris, who's a senior who's so experienced and so poised. Getting one or two of those guys in foul trouble might be a way. Now, I get that you're saying, Glenn, what a great idea. Just get their best players out of the game. You should have suggested that a few weeks ago, Glenn.
I mean, I get exactly what you're saying. And it kind of comes back to what I was saying, is that we have to do something extraordinary, something different. I think, and I'll just be honest, if it's a back and forth, man on man, and everything's equal, if everything is equal, KU wins. You know, I know K-State fans are not going to like hearing that, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. If everything is equal, KU is going to win the game. We have to do something to make the advantage, or to push the advantage to us. And if that's somebody has to go out there and score 35 points, then somebody got to score 35 points. Mm-hmm. If we got to get people in foul trouble, then we got to get people in foul trouble. You know, something extraordinary just has to happen for K-State to win the game tonight. And again, that's not saying that K-State's got a bunch of bad basketball players. No. I'm not saying that at all. I go, so people, you got to read through between the lines there. Mm-hmm. It's just, we're dealing with facts. KU's better. To beat a team that's better, either number one, they have to have a bad shooting night. Maybe we force that. Maybe that's the extraordinary thing. Like you mentioned, Glenn, they almost shot 70% on Saturday. Maybe they shoot 30%, you know, and maybe 30% is good enough for us to win. Now, if we're going to turn around and shoot 33%, that's not going to be good enough.
Yeah.
So we have to just do something to win the game. But I'm actually fired up about it. I think the guys are going to come up ready to play. I think they're just going to come out and say, you know what? We've lost 4 in a row. Everybody's down on. They think we're going to get blown out here. It's time for us to stand up. And I'll be honest, Fitz, it's time. It's put up or shut up time. It really is.
Yeah. And Brian, I think going back to Dickinson a little bit, he's going to be the best big on the floor. He might be the best big in the country. But right. K-State does have a little bit of depth at that spot. I'm not saying that they have 3 guys who are wonderful, but I look at Will McNair, Jarrell Colbert, even Taj Manning, if they want to put him out there. And I'm wondering if K-State doesn't say, hey, we're going to play 4 guys tonight at the 5 spot.
Yeah,
and we're going to make it hell for Dickinson all night long. And hey, those 4 guys might all finish with 4 fouls. We're going to foul Dickinson 18 times tonight, but he's going to be worn out. And by the end of that game, he's going to be like, oh my gosh, can you guys get off of me? and whether or not that strategy will work, I don't know, but that's something I might throw out there. Because if you try to have one guy play 38 minutes against Hunter Dickinson on the night, he might score 38 points.
That's right. He's going to wear you out. Yep. He's going to wear you out. It's not going to work.
He's impressive. I'll say that because he seems to have a great sense of who he is as a basketball player. You know, he's not a great athlete. He's not a great jumper. He's a big boss. And he plays like, I'm going to dominate this game. And he almost dares officials to stop him. You know, I'm going to put this elbow up here. I'm going to duck my. It's impressive to watch. But Glenn, you name the guy. I haven't seen a basketball player, college basketball player, who I have been more fascinated with than Johnny Furphy in a long time.
Yeah.
He's the glue. Is he the best player? No. You know, he might be the player with the biggest upside. I think this dude's going to play a long time in the NBA. But whoever coached him in Australia, someone hire that guy to coach in the United States because he has some of the best offensive skills without the ball I have seen in so very long. He beats his defender before the ball even touches his hands. He does this thing that I just love, and great three-point shooters do it. So the ball's on the other side of the court, and you can see your defender. And so that second when he looks away and you're no longer in his peripheral, he just slides back a little bit and opens that gap to a point where he knows I can get my shot off. This guy can't get to me. It is amazing to watch him do it. The second you take your eye off him, he's moving away from you. And then you've got that nanosecond of where'd he go, you know, and he just, it's beautiful to watch. Mm-hmm. I think he's the guy that K-State absolutely has to take away because the other dudes are going to get their points. They're going to do their thing. I like the plan of, you know, maybe putting Michaela Buddy Rich out there a few times. Size-wise, greatly outmatched, but he could foul and make you know you fouled him. Right. But whoever's covering Furphy, I think it might be Cam Carter. Don't let him slip away because he's a sneaky Australian. And I tell you what, those Australians are known for being sneaky. They're from down under. Like, oh, he's fun to watch. They got to figure out how to slow him up. And if they disrupt him, I think you really do disrupt KU because he's the guy that stepped into the lineup and kind of changed things for them.
Yeah, you beat me to it, Fitz. He's exactly what the doctor ordered for KU. Preseason and then even through early conference season when I mentioned they got upset on the road those couple times, West Virginia and UCF, you're saying, man, I told people, I said, they might have 1 through 4, the best four. Nobody has four players better in the country than KU. But they need a fifth or sixth or seventh guy. And then they move Johnny Furphy into the starting lineup, and you said, oh boy, he might not even be, you know, he's really, really good. And the other thing that I think we've seen a new Kevin McCullough. I want to make sure we give him his flowers. He's a different player than he was last year. He came back and has kind of taken the Ochai Agbaji, Jalen Wilson, now Kevin McCullough path. And I tell you what, we saw Jalen Wilson do 20 times last year. He took it to the right side. He took it to the rack and said, I'm going to go to the hoop and I'm either going to score or you're going to foul me. And I won't be surprised if at some point, if the game is close down the stretch, if we see Kevin McCullough almost take a similar mindset. I'm not saying he's the same player as Jalen Wilson, but I'm saying that he has shown more authority in their offense this year when needed.
It's going to be an interesting group of matchups for K-State, who they put where. I mean, there's some obvious ones here, but I'll just look. We're talking about KU, and it took us a while to get to their probably best player because they just have so many dudes out of these five. They all can play. They all can hoop. But their depth is an issue, Brian. It's a big issue. And normally I'd say, run, man. Try to run them out of the gym. Try to wear them out. I don't think I want to see K-State try to run. They're just so turnover prone. And with the lack of a true point guard, they don't make great decisions in the open court. Mm-hmm. It frustrates me. That's probably what frustrates me the most, is because the easiest solution plays right into the K-State's weaknesses of not valuing possessions at all. And against Kansas, if you give them empty possessions, they will take advantage of it. So I don't want to play a slow-paced game with Kansas, but also if you run and it's not working, you might be playing right into their hand.
Well, that's a great point, Fitz, because one of the problems with K-State is the guys that get the majority of the minutes can't handle the ball very well. And you know, it's fine if you don't have a true point guard, but you have a 2 and a 3 that those guys have a great handle. Well, K-State doesn't have that. So that's where the issue lies, is that, you know, you want to get up and down the court. Okay, you have a guy. And Tyler Perry, I mean, granted, he's not a point guard. I mean, he's just not. But he can at least handle the basketball. Where Kelly and Kaluma, they don't have great handles. So it's like, what are you going to do? It's like you can't just have one guy when you're running up and down the court and just have one guy be the guy dribbling and handling the basketball. You can't do that. That's not how it works. And if you try to do that, first of all, you're going to wear Charlie Perry. You're going to wear him completely out. But he's going to, I mean, and he'll turn the ball over. The other guys are going to turn the ball over. I've been calling for it. I think you got to get some of the younger guys that can handle the basketball. I think you got to put them in the game. If you're going to try to run up and down the court, you just have to do that. I think it's time that K-State says we can't just continue to go down this path with what we're doing because we're not getting good results. It's time to put those other guys out on the basketball court, man, and just say, okay, what can happen? Because K-State doesn't have to be a program that just says, okay, we got freshmen, but they only need to get 5 minutes a night. Well, for that, that's a problem anyway. That's a whole different discussion, though. But, yeah, they got to get up and down the court. I think they do, Fitz, but I think you got to get the guys out there that can get up and down the court and help. you know, and maybe you go small. Maybe you just, you go really small. Now you're going to get beat up on the board. I mean, and you will, but
you're getting beat up on the board anyway.
Exactly. I was just going to say that, but you're going to get beat up anyway. You're already doing that, but maybe you get another 8 to 10 points, but just because you're beating somebody down the court, I think we got to look for ways to generate some offense that we haven't been able to do the last few games.
I'm in. I'll say this. If this turns out to be a loss, and then, you know, maybe you go to BYU on Saturday and lose, it's time to invest in the young guys.
100%.
You know, at this point, now you're just hanging on for dear life in the season. And I know you want to make the NCAA tournament, but the guys you're playing aren't getting that task done.
Correct.
Day-Day Ames is more of a true point guard. Has he had turnovers? Absolutely. He needs to learn some lessons. Well, if the season's going to be dwindling into dust, let's start the lessons now and not put them off.
Yes.
I wouldn't mind seeing the young guys just roll. You know, what was it, Tang, that said the great thing about young guys is they don't know. You know, they don't know the moment is so big. But they also don't know a lot of things that they need to know to not make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So the good thing is also the bad thing. And yeah. I agree with that. But I want to see these guys, how they react to this. Because this is, you said it right. This isn't the typical KU, you know, really pester you up and down the court or in the half court. They just kind of smother you. It's almost more like a Bruce Weber defense. I don't mean that as an insult to KU.
I don't think either side's going to like that.
Yeah, but I did appreciate the way he did that. It was like, oh, you brought the ball up. Now, good luck scoring. I mean, that's that's how they stayed in games. And KU does that with a much more potent offense. And I think that's what makes him really dangerous. But I, you know, physically, I just don't know if K-State has the answers. So schematically, they better figure out how to make this work. And as we get ready to go to break, some quick comments. I'm beginning to feel like something's going on in the locker room. I know Coach Stang keeps saying these guys are bought in, but they don't play that way, and they don't look like they're having fun with each other right now. And I'm that's maybe my biggest concern.
Yeah, and I think at times when things aren't going well, the natural human instinct is to, I don't want to even say panic, but to change something and to try and fix it yourself. And I think maybe when Tang is wanting these guys to stay bought in, kind of stay true to the process. I know that's a cliche, but I don't know. I guess if we're seeing that, I'm not saying we aren't, but that's hard to do when you lose four straight in conference play. Now, K-State could win tonight and all is well, right? And so I think probably Wildcat fans as a whole maybe got a little bit too high after the 4-1 start to league play, and maybe are too low after the current struggles. And that being said, they lose two more this week, and like you said, Fitz, then fans can be as low as they want because it ain't looking good.
Nope. Well, let's hear from our sponsors right now. Let's park a break here. We're sponsored by Synergy Financial Partners. Go check out their website, synergyfinancial.com. The ad says it. They're just not your typical financial planners. They're trying to plan your future, particularly if you're a small business person. Reach out. I think they can help you.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the mission is to change the way Americans plan for their financial future. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Okay, boys, let's switch topics. Hopefully Mr. Tim will be here. I miss the big guy. Moving up the show, I lost some of my Tim love, and I need more of it. I need more of it. I don't know how he does it. I can't even fathom having that voice. Big B, here's a chance to promo tomorrow a little bit, but our buddy Abe in the questions here brings up the alliance that the Big Ten and the SEC are talking about. I know this will be a topic on tomorrow's Big 12 Insiders, 1 p.m. right here. But Glenn, this is a big concern for programs outside of those conferences. And I got news for some of those programs inside those conferences. It's a worry for you too, because you're going to kick your ass out of these conferences if you're not pulling your weight. Period. End of story. When it gets this greedy, it's going to get ugly. And it's going to get ugly starting with trying to exclude entire regions of the country because they're not in the cool club. And eventually, though, when they've excluded that and they still want more money, they're going to look at the Vanderbilts, Northwesterns, Indianas, and some of those other programs and say, yeah, you aren't pulling your weight. We're going to bring in someone else, and you're going to get relegated right out of the conference you've been in for as long as you know your fans know in college athletics. This is a scary time for sports. They're about to crush college sports, and they think they're doing it for the best, but they're only acting in their best interests.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, and I think we know, at least in football, that people, at least the trend has been towards, although maybe this year, anyways, the trend has been towards, you know, SEC, Big Ten, and then a gap. And in basketball, at least, I think the Big 12 is at the top of both of those, probably by a significant margin this year. But the fact of the matter is that football kind of rules the world, or at least rules the country. And so if you're the Big 12, you're finding a way to make that gap, at least between the second conference and the third, which is, I think, is the Big 12, as small as possible. And I'm not saying this is the solution, but sometimes it's as simple as like going out and winning football games. I mean, you're talking about a 12 team playoff. There's going to be a Big 12 team, maybe two, probably one Big 12 team in that. And if that team can go out and win one, two, the national championship, that does numbers for TV, for your deals, for recruiting. I mean, so I don't want to say the solution is, you know, just go win, but it wouldn't hurt probably.
No, I think you're right, Glenn. I think the solution is winning. And TCU had that opportunity. Yeah. The problem is you'll get slaughtered. You know, it's one thing if you go and you make a good showing and you win or lose, that's fine. But when you go and you get slaughtered, then it's like, oh, well, then the previous game didn't really mean anything. That was a fluke. This is what you really are. Oh, and by the way, this is your best team in that conference. And I'm like, well, geez, you know, and then you think about it. It's like, where's your argument? What can you say? You have no pushback to that. So it absolutely is when, look, the first couple years, I don't think that the Big 12 is going to get more than one team in. I really don't. I would hope that they got at least two, but I don't see that actually happening. I think they're going to get one, and I think that team has to go in and win at least two games in this thing. I go, right, because for us to start getting more teams, because you know they're going to plant four SEC teams in. You know they're going to plant three Big Ten teams in. So that's what it's going to be. So then I think they have the other two, you know, and the non-qualified. I mean, and it's just, there's not going to be enough room.
Right.
There's not going to be enough spaces, you know. So it's just, you got to go win. I think it's problematic. I think it's nonsense. Fitz is 100% right. Some of these schools are going to get kicked out. Northwestern and Vanderbilt, they're going to be out. Because at that point, they keep them around because obviously they're good schools and they compete in other things. But they are, the academic side is so good for both of those schools. Well, they won't care about that anymore.
No.
I mean, and they really don't care about it now, but they say that they care about it to keep them around. They really don't care now. And if they have an opportunity to get rid of them, as soon as that opportunity comes, they're going to jump at the chance. They will literally jump at that chance. And it'll be other teams. You think Arkansas has deep roots in the SEC? No, they don't. They will kick Arkansas out. Even though Arkansas has a ton of money, they will kick Arkansas out at the drop of a hat when they get the opportunity. If they can bring somebody else, they can bring a Florida State in or somebody like that, they'll kick them out at the drop of a hat, man.
The big argument here and what's taking place, and the thing that I think is the sneaky evil going on here, is these two conferences are trying to take a hold of the playoff selection process.
Yes.
They'll be in charge of it.
Yes.
What?
We'll handle it.
They're going to use this argument that, well, if you don't give us this power, we're just going to leave it behind and we're not even going to play with it, and we're going to create our own division. And at that point, the proper answer for the Big 12 and ACC is, see ya.
Yeah.
We're not scheduling you.
We're not scheduling you.
We're going to cancel every game that we have scheduled. And if you want to play at a semi-pro level, we're going to keep playing college football here. Mm-hmm. See ya. Get the hell out of our way. Maybe we'll be perceived as a step below, but you're only going to be able to play games against each other or against really bad teams and lower the value of your TV contracts. Mm-hmm. Just don't play the game. They're trying to suck you into their game. If we don't get our way, we're going to do this. Okay. Oh, yeah. Do it. We're not going to schedule you. We're not going to play any non-conference games with you. We'll play each other. We'll play the Sun Belt and the Mountain West and FBS school, FCS schools, but we're going to communicate to them too. It's not in your best interest to play them. I know financially you need it in the short term, but they're going to crush you. They're going to make it impossible for you to function as an athletic department.
Yep.
This is a fascinating road we're on. And we went down this road a little bit further than I want to, because we will discuss this tomorrow on the Big 12 Insiders, because this impacts the conference as much as any realignment or any game by far. I mean, because it just that way. If the ACC collapses, it's going to really create an interesting issue for the Big 12. They're going to have some really valuable commodities out there that maybe they can grab a hold of. At the very least, we know that we believe that, you know, 10 to 12 of the ACC schools will have immediate invitations into the other three. But, you know, does it help at all with the Big 12? I'm not sure. There's just so many moving parts to this. But I'm going to be blunt here. The Big 10 and SEC need to hear the wrath of the fans and the other schools that if you're going to blow up college football, we're not going to play a part of it. You want to play your games on ABC? We'll be over on ESPN 19 watching Big 12 games. Now, you just got to be, the fans and the schools have to be very definitive about it with a giant FU, the essential of the, essentially the horns down to a conference. It'll make them mad. It'll hurt them in their souls. That's what they need to do, is hurt them in their souls, Big B. Sorry, I got carried away.
Hey, side note. Texas upsets K-State women's basketball yesterday, and I don't know if Rodney Terry saw it, but the players were jumping up and down on the court afterwards.
Just out. Just unbelievable. Players would enjoy a victory.
There were kids watching.
I know.
There were kids
watching. I couldn't believe it. I threw up.
I know. It's a post-game celebration. Flaunting in your opponent's face is equivalent to 7 murders. It used to be 6, but now we think it's 7.
It's
ridiculous.
Let's talk about the women. You say upset. Technically, by rankings, yes. Mm-hmm. The Texas fans were chanting overrated at K-State. I've never figured it out.
It's a silly chant.
If we beat you,
yeah,
you can't be good.
And K-State will probably chant it tonight if they're winning. So
yep, exactly.
It is a silly chant. It's like, yeah, it's like, hey, you're so bad that we beat you.
Right.
That's almost what you're saying.
Cell phone. I admire that they got to 3-2 without Ayoka Lee on the court. Mm-hmm. And they're 3-2 now after losing these two. I need to get an update on her schedule, but this was going to happen. And they're going to lose more games. If they go 500 without her in this conference, I think they're doing pretty good. And if they go above 500, watch out. Notice they lost 2 games and only dropped to 8, which seems like an appropriate amount of droppage. Is that what I'm looking for here? For a team that lost 2 games without their star on the court. But if it persists, they'll continue to drop. But this is an NCAA tournament team. I said this on my TV show. This is an NCAA tournament team without Lee. Correct. I mean, they're good enough to get into the field without Ayoka Lee. So with her, when she comes back, this is a legitimate Sweet 16, if not Final 14.
Yeah, they're really, really good. And they've shown that, I think that this is something that when she does return, if she's fully healthy, this stretch could end up being a positive for them in the sense that it forced other players to take a little bit more authority, and it helped Jeff Mitty find out where he does or even does not have depth in having to play more players. I think that, yeah, they got to get through this, but I think they've shown that actually they're still pretty good. I mean, dude, playing at Texas and playing at Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma was 7-1 in league play before that game. Those are tough games when you are at full strength. And K-State hung in there, by the way, in both those games. The Texas one got out of hand a little bit, but they cut it back to 7. It almost felt like if they would have had 6 more minutes of game time, they could have made a run at that thing. They hung in there both those games without their All-American, and I think this is a team that can be really, really dangerous if they get everybody play. And by the way, I don't even think they were playing their best basketball this week. Mm-hmm. It's not like they played amazing without her and still couldn't win. Like, they without their All-American, probably also had off nights and still put up quite the fight.
Yeah. I think they have a chance here. It's just what you said, Glenn. I just think for the simple fact that they are playing, they're playing good basketball. Like, they're not playing bad basketball. That would be different if they were just completely fell apart without her and were just couldn't function. That is not what's going on here. That's basically taking away one of the best players in the country from your team and still competing at a high, high level. But you lost 2 conference road games against good competition. You know, if it was bad competition, we could feel bad about ourselves. But that's not what happened here. I think there's still a lot that, first of all, who's to say that even with her that they go there and win? That's part of the problem. I think there's no guarantee that they're going to either one of those places and winning with her. So that we played so well without her, I just think bodes well. Number one, that means the coaching is outstanding.
Yeah.
Means the women have bought into what is going on. I just love what is happening. I think to make the tournament, I think I don't think that's even up in question. I just think do they get to the Final Four? If she can come back and be fully healthy, can they make a run to the Final Four? Now, look, it gets tougher because the women's game is very, very good, you know, without question. It's very, very good. And at the upper levels, They have some really good basketball players. But so do we. And I think that's one thing to keep in mind. So do we. I think sometimes K-State fans for so long get caught up in, oh, they have this and they have this. Mm-hmm. You know what? We have good players too. And it's okay to say so.
It's almost an imposter syndrome sort of thing. It's like, wait a minute, we were just number 2 in the country, you know?
And that's so right.
Teams should be scared to play us. I think K-State women, the goal has to be right now probably winning enough games to host to start the NCAA tournament. And that would be huge. And I think that – I don't know – I'm willing to admit that this is the most I've gotten into women's basketball this year. And that's a credit to Jeff Mitty's team. And I've been following them much closer than I ever have women's basketball in my life because they're so much fun to watch and they're so good. So I don't know the numbers to back this up. But I would think that in the women's game more than the men's game, those top teams – do end up advancing further in the tournament more often. In the men's, it seems like we'll have an 8 seed and a 4 seed and a 6 seed in the Final Four quite often. I know that in the women's game, there's been dynasties and there's been these a lot. I know last year, I think it was Iowa and LSU, of course. And I think K-State should feel like they belong in that group. And I'm not saying that upsets don't happen in March in the women's game, but that K-State can avoid those upsets better than maybe a men's 1 or 2 seed can.
Well, they definitely happen a lot less in the women's game than they do.
No doubt.
They happen a lot less.
Part of that is what we mentioned. You play on your home court, and that helps prevent upsets. But also, I've gotten into this quite a bit. There just hasn't been enough top talent in the women's game to distribute throughout the entire landscape of women's basketball, particularly in a 15 scholarship environment. And now we're seeing, because of NIL and the transfer portal, some of that trickle down is happening. And we're seeing the talent be allocated better across the country. We'll see how it all plays out for K-State. But you brought up a point that brings us back around to the men's team. I think if we ask most K-Staters, most Big 12 observers, is Kansas State men, is that an NCAA tournament team? The answer is no.
No.
And, you know, it probably doesn't get them back even into the discussion unless they win tonight against Kansas. And maybe you start discussing in the NCAA tournament. But if they get to postseason, and the women are hosting the NCAA tournament, they're going on the road for the NIT. And that's just an interesting thing. And they should go on the road for the NIT. The women have earned it. That's a whole nother concern. Right now, I'm concerned about this team getting to the postseason. I pulled a full Tom Asbury here. I'm not defining the postseason as being the NCAA tournament. I'm going to throw in the NIT and the grandma invitational in someone's backyard in Wamego. Get to the postseason.
I would absolutely cover a tournament in Wamego, by the way. Oh,
especially if it's in grandma's backyard. It's going to be like, cookies.
Yeah, but to your point, Fitz, a win tonight and then a loss over the weekend probably puts K-State, maybe you get in that like next four out conversation. If they were to win both, then maybe you're putting them more on the bubble, but there's work to be done for sure. But this team showed early in conference play they can heat up, but that feels like a long time ago now.
Well, here's the thing, and K-State fans, pay close attention. This would not be the first time that a team lost four conference games in a row and made the NCAA tournament. So I know it's doom and gloom now. There have been plenty of teams out there that have lost four, even five games in a row in early February that went on to make the NCAA tournament. So that's the good news about this. The bad news, although, is where do you see this changing? That's the bad news. It's like, okay, other teams may have had a superstar on their team. What comes to mind is I think it's the 09 UConn team that went on a huge run. Well, they had Kemba Walker. That's a little different than what K-State has on their team, and they lost a bunch of games in a row where a number 9 seed go on to win the tournament and won the whole thing, got hot at the right time. But it's just, where do you see it changing at K-State? Now, it doesn't mean that we can't catch fire. Doesn't mean that, guys can start playing a little bit better or up to their potential. Because in my personal opinion, I don't think that's happened the last four games. I don't think they've played up to their potential. And I think that's what is probably driving the coaching staff absolutely bananas. Is they're like, guys, look, you're better than this. What are we doing out there? Part of that's coaching. They got to get the best out of those guys too. You can't just leave them off the hook. You got to figure out a way to get your guys to be able to play at their best. Put them in better positions, kind of what you said, Fitz. Maybe you get them on the run. Maybe you give up three or four more turnovers, but if you can generate another 8, 10, 12 points because you've sped things up, maybe that's the route you just have to go. You got to live with the good, with the bad. What's going to be better for us to win games? Is it, we might have 19 turnovers, but you know what? We got 18 more shots at the basket because we were just running up and down the court. We got them tired, and they committed more turnovers. I just think you got to do something.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. If we can't just keep doing the same thing, because we are going to continue to get the same result. And we just – I mean, again, I know everybody – and it's true. It's a definition of insanity, but we have to do something different. Mm-hmm. And I just believe the coaching staff is going to do that.
I'd like to point out that last night on my TV show – Glenn, I'm sure you watch it. I brought up the fact that Jerome Tang mentioned after the game at Oklahoma State that they got beat to every loose ball, and they did. It was remarkable. When the ball hit the floor, 90% of the time Oklahoma State came up with it. And maybe that's effort, maybe that's quickness, I don't know. But I said this, and I apologize to everyone. They lost the play hard chart.
Oh, goodness.
They're going to lose the play hard chart until they start paying attention to the little things. The little things. When you pass someone the ball, pass it to where they're in shooting position.
Correct.
Because if they got to gather, the defender closes them out.
Exactly.
If you're dribbling the ball, try to avoid your own feet and other body appendages except for your hands.
Yeah.
It's kind of a rule I follow. And if you're past the ball, catch the ball. Don't let it go through your hands. So many of their mistakes are just mind-numbing. Like, you're capable of catching the ball, you're capable of passing the ball better than that, and you're not doing it. Will you pay attention to all these little things and take pride in them, and then you take pride in everything else?
Their passing, actually, you bring it up, Fitz, and that stood out to me as well. I mean, it seems like sometimes they don't pass it with authority of like, let me zip it to the guy. It's like when you it when you catch a pass from like a quarterback or something like that, and you're like, oh my gosh, and like you weren't ready for it to fly at you like that, that you need to pass the ball like that in the Big 12. The other thing that I've noticed, and I've noticed this a lot in basketball, all the way down to high school, all the way up to probably the NBA, and K-State is included in this, they set some lousy screens. Pick and roll doesn't work if you don't get in the guy's way. And sometimes it's jog over there and stand there, and it's like it doesn't have – you might as well not even go over
enough,
there.
Glenn. They're not physical.
It doesn't
enough.
Do anything. It doesn't do anything. Brian, to your point, I think KU lost 3 conference games in a row last year and won the league. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to panic. Now, somebody out there just heard me say that I think K-State is going to win the league, and I did not say that. Let me be very clear. I didn't say that. But the other thing that I'll say, and I don't know if this is glass half full or if this is sad to say because there's still a lot of basketball left to be played, K-State lost 2 of its best players this year. And so while it's been discouraging the last 4 games and the team has not looked good and there have absolutely been concerns, I'm not into the territory of, oh, is this program headed in the right direction? This is a different team than the staff thought they were going to be putting on the court in September or even October or even December for that matter, with Quez Glover being out. And so I know that might not be what fans want to hear is, oh, well, we'll get them next year because we had injuries, because everybody has injuries. But we're talking about a massive impact to K-State season. I mean, Naquan Tom will be the best player on their team, I think, by a large margin.
Yep, I agree.
I think 2 out of the 3 best players on the team are not on the team. I think that's what it is, you know. Yep. But it also comes back to, you know, if you live in the transfer portal and you die by the transfer portal, which is what's happening, I'm a firm believer that that transfer portal can work. But look, you got to start bringing freshmen in that can play right away. Right. I just think that you can't keep bringing freshmen in that you got to sit a year or can only play 5 minutes. And I'll be flat out honest, and I say it about football all the time, that's not how the big boys do it. They don't bring in guys to sit them all the time. They don't do that. Number one, transfer portals out there. You do that too often, they're going to leave. That would be the first thing. But the second thing is be a program that plays these guys. Bring in enough talent. Now, I know they're just getting started, but again, if you live by that, you're going to die by that. It's just you got to stop bringing guys in that are development. Basketball and football are not the same. And I understand what K-State is in football. And yes, it's got to be a school of development. Basketball does not. It absolutely does not. And we cannot treat it that way.
Yeah, I'll just say this. David Castillo, their signee for next season, would be the best point guard on this roster if he was playing as a senior.
By far. Yes.
Now, physically, he looks like a senior in high school, and he's going to need to catch up on that. But they'll be adding him in, and I'll be interested to see how Jerome Tang and his coaching staff address the transfer portal after their experiences this year. Because I think they – I'll be blunt here. I think they undervalued ball handling and leadership and just went with experience. And they got lots of experience with Tyler Perry, but they're not getting – the other things that you really need for an impactful senior guard coming in.
And Tang,
go ahead.
Tang talked about this before. Obviously he loves experience. I think he said last year he wanted a point guard who had played 100 games of college basketball or something like that. He loves experience, but then this year he's actually talked about this a little bit too. That can be good or bad. If they have 100 games full of bad habits, it's like, actually this guy's got a ton of experience, but it's a pain in the butt because we can't get him to erase this idea that he's going to be doing X, Y, Z all the time. And so they need to get guys with experience. And I don't think that's a bad strategy, but guys with the right experience and guys who, if they do have any of those bad habits, are willing to come in and have their game transformed, even if it's in their last year of college basketball.
I'll just say this before we go to the break. I played basketball in my youth, and I remember in junior high or even younger, learning, don't dribble the ball to the corner and get trapped. You should never dribble the ball into the corner. And I watched a senior guard do that and get trapped by 2 true freshmen. I don't understand how you get here to be at this level with that level of experience and success and still do things like that. And doesn't matter if you're a point guard, you don't do that as a power forward. You don't do that. So it's very frustrating. Let's get to our final break here. Before we wrap it up with some more of your comments and questions, hopefully there's some good stuff over there. Brian take a peek at that. And we'll be right back. Make sure you check out Synergy Financial Partners. Good people, good products. It's good stuff.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the vision is to build the world's largest consumer financial education and empowerment company. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Welcome back to the K-State Insiders. Tim isn't going to make it today.
No.
He didn't text. Nothing, man.
It's all right.
Fitz, Glenn, Big B, your trio, your threesome. What do we got over here? We got anything cooking in the
Yeah, cabinet? I got this good question that popped up. Brian, hey, what do you know? Can fear of embarrassment on the big national stage with everyone watching temporarily fix effort and culture problems for a game? I think the easy answer to that is yes, it absolutely can. They can absolutely get up for this one game with everybody watching. My mom's at home, my cousins, all my boys are back home. Everybody's watching, you know, and if you want to watch a game on ESPN, you have to be watching me. That changes life. I remember way back when I played, it changed things, man, when I knew everybody was going to be watching. So, and to get up, and not just that, you're playing Kansas. So yes, it absolutely can change a thing. And can that, and if you win and you play well, can that trickle on down the road? 100%. Doesn't mean that it will, but it absolutely can. I just think this is an opportunity. I really do think this is an opportunity. I don't know if we'll win, but yes, it absolutely can change it for a night, guys.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. If you can't get up for this, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You got to work on yourself if you can't absolutely get up for this, because the moment is huge, the stage is huge, and the crowd is going to be volatile. And if you can't feed off that as a player, yikes.
Yes.
Yikes. You might thrive in the European League where there's not many fans. I don't know.
And by the way, these guys aren't going to have to wait until they hit a big shot, you know, at the under 16 to notice that crowd. It's going to be 2 hours before tip off when you know, you name the player. Day-Day Ames walks out on the court and says, this one's different. You know, yep. They'll know that going in. And so it's a question of does the moment get too big, or is the light too bright, or does it actually have the opposite effect where they say, okay, we better turn up for this one because there's a lot of people here who are going to be really upset if we don't.
Yeah. I got a really important question here, and this might be the most important thing I've ever asked.
Oh boy.
If you're in line, you know, 5 hours before tip off and you're out there, it's kind of cool and, you know, moist today. And I said moist, I'm so sorry. I got to watch my language. You know, it's going to be up into the 50s supposedly later, but it's, no, it's not freezing out, but it's not ideal. Do you want pizza? If they're going to bring you food, do you want pizza? I say bring a passel of tacos. Like, order, call up both of the places with bells and say, I need 500. And, you know, and just take 1,000 tacos out there or something. Everyone buys pizza, and I just feel like pizza's the easy out. Donuts, Barcy, that's pretty good.
Donuts could work. Tacos sound like it'd be kind of difficult to distribute and to eat without, you know, while standing in line, but we do have Ryan Gilbert maybe could deliver some tacos, or better yet, some drinks from Taco Lucha.
Yeah,
I don't want to sign him up for anything. But if you're watching this, you can go ahead and tag him in a tweet and say that he promised you tacos and drinks.
Yeah. Tacos can get messy though, out there in the line. Tacos can get messy. I think pizza, but I think donuts. Donuts is better. It's not early, but you know what? As I've gotten older and fatter, you can eat a donut anytime and it tastes just as good anytime.
You know what, though? Donuts remind me of my life, because that hole in the middle is less than what I deserve. I don't want the hole in the middle. I want the entire donut. Just a giant circle of pastry. Maybe that'll be, if I open a donut shop, maybe that's my shtick.
We donuts with donuts, but we don't take out the middle.
Yeah. Unholy donuts. There, start your new business.
Wow.
Unholy donuts. Guys, Glenn, will you be there? You're sending one of the peons. I mean, one of your assistants.
I'm headed over there in a few hours.
Okay. I will be there. Everyone will be there. This is the game that they run out of media seating, and it's always entertaining. And my friend Kelly Stewart, Kelly in Vegas, will be there. So if you're sitting in section 11 around row 9, bring earplugs. She's loud, very loud. Boys, good show. Appreciate all the comments. We had some really good stuff over there we didn't quite get to. Cats, Jayhawks, 8 o'clock, ESPN, Shambi and Billis on the call. It is the big stage, and I'm happy that there will be no chanting of that certain word, I hope.
KSU.
That's right.
Yes. Thanks for watching, folks. We'll see you tomorrow on the Big 12 Insiders. Got a couple of great guests. Well, one in Ryan Gilbert. Sorry, Ryan. I had to get that in.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not letting you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.